Hello, Mason Avenue audio listeners. This is Rob Wolf, and welcome to another episode of Unformettable, where we take a look back at some of the more obscure but quintessential Met players from the past. So the Mets are playing the Twins this week in one of those odd and rare interleague matchups, and that kind of put me in mind of a 1980s Met who had a very brief tenure with the Mets before spending more of his career with the Twins, and that would be David West, who made his debut late in the season for the 1988 Mets. I've heard some of you kids out there say something along the lines of sick hearing about the 1986 Mets, or, you know, sometimes later Met teams maybe have expressed that sentiment, and I just can't identify with that statement at all. I mean, I get it, but, you know, really it's not just the 86 Mets to me, it's all about those 1980s Mets, and that feeling that I'm sure I'll never capture again, that everything would always work out for the Mets. I mean, imagine thinking that, how stupid and young I was, but it really felt that way in the 80s. It felt like the Mets would trade a backup catcher, and sure, they'd acquire a Cy Young Award caliber pitcher like David Cone. The Mets would bring up a prospect, and he'd be a Cy Young contender or an immediate All-Star. That was just the feeling that you had when you rooted for the Mets from 85 to 90. Now, you know, looking back now, they only won that one World Championship, and people look at it as a disappointment. But they look at it as a disappointment because you thought everything was going to work out. The Mets really owned the town, not just an expression. I mean, I remember in 1982... I was in elementary school. My friend, in a class of like 75 kids in the Bronx, my friend Rob Ward and I were like the only two Met fans in the class. By 88, 89, by graduation, I'd say fully 60% of those kids were Met fans. But, you know, we were the originals. I like to think that's why we became such good friends. Although it could be the alphabet and the sitting next to each other. But either way, I like to believe Mets. But the larger point is that just that era was so much fun to root for the Mets, and you really just expected everything to work out. And it was also a halcyon time before prospect coverage was what it is today. And you could just dream on prospects. And I really feel like the New York teams, but the Mets especially, were incredibly good at hyping up prospects in a world where coverage wasn't as intense as it is now. And you have, you know, expert amateurs like our own Steve and Lucas and Ken who know more about prospects than maybe, you know, the actual Baseball America people did. Just felt like every Met prospect was going to be a huge star. David West was described as untouchable by the New York Times in 89 spring training, and he was going to be the next in the line of Mets' Cy Young Award winners, this tall, young strikeout pitcher who couldn't get a sniff only because our rotation was Gooden, Cone, Fernandez, Darling, Ojeda. But that he would be coming, and he would be great, just like just about everyone associated with the Mets back then. So David West ultimately made his Met debut on September 24th, 1988, in a game against the loathed, shout out to my wife and her in-laws in Missouri, the loathed 1980 St. Louis Cardinals. It was a game that I probably marked on my calendar in April, thinking I could decide the pennant, I could decide the NL East, the September 88. But the Mets had already clinched by then. They were resting up their players, and they brought up David West to, get his feet wet and give players a rest for the 88 playoff series that, of course, did not end as we wanted to. West made his debut, pitched five innings, gave up one run in a game that the Mets won 14-1. So it was just five innings, but, you know, it just felt like the dawn of another great Mets pitching career. So again, as a, you know, the promising prospect, there was just seemed to be no place for him on the 89 team with that dominant all-star rotation that we just mentioned. So he started the year in AAA in Tidewater, where, you know, he still excelled, going 7-4 with a 2.37 ERA. Down in Tidewater, his strikeouts did go down. He was one of those more than a strikeout in inning pitchers in the minors. That seemed like it was starting to fade a little. But again, we didn't really cover prospects as intensely as we did back then. All I knew was that, you know, he was waiting in the wings in the minors if things went wrong. And they actually brought him up in June of 89 to fortify the bullpen. And what would inaugur kind of what the future probably would or should have held for David West, his numbers were great out of the pen in 89. He allowed only one run over 14 and a third innings in his first six appearances that season. But when Doc Gooden went down with a shoulder injury and was lost for the year in 1989, West was moved to the rotation, and he was completely raked in the only other two starts he would make as a Met, besides that one appearance in 1988, allowing 15 earned runs over 6 2/3 innings in, two losses.
Hey everybody, it's Nilay Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bohn. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain, or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
West made three more mop-up relief appearances for a reeling 1989 Met team. The dropped seven games in a row, leading straight into the July 31st trade deadline in 1989, falling from two games out of first as right after the All-Star break to seven out, and actually in fourth place behind the then first place Montreal Expos. So yeah, on July 31st, 1989, the Mets were seven out, a seven-game losing streak, only 53-50. Behind the first place Expos, five games behind the eventual division winner Chicago Cubs, and two games behind the St. Louis Cardinals. So I can now kind of look back and see that this was a Chris Benson-y, Victor Zambrano-y, Scott Kazmir kind of situation. But again, in the 80s, I thought, this team's never out of it. This is the Mets. So I believe I was quite excited when the Mets packed up a parcel of the future to try and make a last-second panic trade deadline move. And on July 31st, 1989, the Mets shipped David West along with Kevin Tappany, Rick Aguilera, and two other prospects to the Minnesota Twins to acquire former Cy Young Award winner Frank Viola. All in all, West finished his brief Met tenure 1-2 with that win in 1988 and the two losses in the other two aforementioned starts, with a 6.53 ERA in 13 appearances over 30 1/3 innings. Now for the season, the Mets would get hot in August, getting within 2.5 of the Cubs by the end of the month, but of course never catching up, and really, you know, that was getting to the end of the glory days, though we really didn't know it then. So Viola went 38-32 over 2+ years with the Mets, but they were really at the end throes of that run. West didn't turn out to be the prospect sacrifice the Mets led us to believe, but Kevin Tappany certainly did turn out to be a solid and useful major league starter for the Twins for a number of years, and I think, as most people know, a more memorable Met, Rick Aguilera, turned into one heck of a reliever, recording 254 of his 318 career saves as a member of the Twins. So the Twins really won that trade there, didn't they? West would spend 4 years with the Twins, actually mostly as a starter, which kind of unbelievable because he recorded a 5.33 ERA over 63 appearances with the Twins, 47 of those starts. And he made 12 starts for the 1991 World Champion Twins. So he has a World Series ring to show for his Major League career. Good for him. He was actually quite excellent in the ALCS, coming out of the pen and spinning 5 2/3 innings of one-hit relief against the Blue Jays. Though he did surrender 4 runs without recording an out in his only appearance in the 1991 World Series against the Braves. West moved on to the Philadelphia Phillies in 1993, where he would get to enjoy being part of another run to the World Series that, of course, did not end in a ring. That year, he pitched primarily in relief, and though Major League Baseball discovered it a little late, that seemed to be what suited him best. He had his best season in 1993, recording a 2.92 ERA over 76 appearances. That gave him a career-best 136 ERA plus and 2.1 BWAR. So he was actually seems like a pretty useful bullpen piece for the 93 Phillies. I don't remember too well because I think I was too bitter about the Mets no longer being good to pay a crap ton of attention to the 93 Phillies. I guess at the time I was somewhat interested in Lenny Dykstra, which was... now I've learned is really foolish, but at any rate, he did struggle in both the playoffs and the World Series for the Phillies, which didn't surprise me. Those were a lot of high-scoring affairs in those playoffs, as I recall. He allowed 7 earned runs over 3 2/3 innings in the NLCS and the World Series, so he does not have an infinite ERA in the World Series. He did record couple of outs while giving up more runs, and he has a career 63.00 ERA in the World Series. West struggled to hang on after another decent year in 94, then really faded in 95 and 96. Couldn't get a job in 97 and played in Japan, and made a final brief abortive comeback attempt with the 1998 Red Sox. He appeared in 6 games, pitched 2 innings, and that was the last he would see of professional baseball. Overall, for his major league career, West recorded a 31-38 record, 4.66 ERA. He appeared in 204 games, made 78 starts, and over 10 seasons, he had a 2.6 BWAR. And today, he works as an instructor at a Memphis, Tennessee baseball academy. But to Met fans, or Met fans of a certain age, I guess, David West will always be unforgettable for just symbolizing a time, a rare time, when you expected everything the Mets touched to turn to gold. I don't know, maybe I need an older Mets fan who went through the, remembered the late 70s or the early 60s to tap me on my shoulder and say, slow your roll, kid, things do not work out for this franchise. But I didn't know any better, and I expected to go to Shea to, you know, watch David West accept the Cy Young Award one day. Didn't work out that way, but he had a nice major league career, unfortunately mostly not with the Mets, and he has a World Series ring to enjoy, and I will think of him this week as the Mets take on the Twins. Thank you for taking the time to think about a former Met and our franchise with me. Really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to Unformettable. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue, where you can find this and all of our podcasts. Please send me your ideas for your favorite, beloved, Unformettable Mets on the website comments, on my Twitter, where I'm at WolfRR, WOLFFRR. And thank you so much for listening. Have a great week. And as always, let's go Mets.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears in video games,
Pittsburgh Batman,
the hell of being trapped in a group text,
unreliable legal advice.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Like the time Arkansas decided to use a captured feral hog as a mascot, and it escaped and it wound up killing 7 rattlesnakes, a pig, and a coyote.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.
Unless it is.
Damn it.
Hello, it's me, Ashley Carmen.
And I'm Caitlin Tiffany.
And we are the hosts of the Verge's podcast, Why'd You Push That Button?
It's a show that asks the hard, weird, occasionally dumb questions about how your tiny tech decisions impact your social life.
So we're asking questions like, how do you choose your skin tone emoji? And why do you delete your tweets?
Every episode, we talk to both users and experts to get to the bottom of these questions that we're confronted with every day.
Check it out. Subscribe to Why'd You Push That Button on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or anywhere else you love to get podcasts.